Welcome to the Veterinary Project Podcast, episode 009.
Welcome to the show created by vets featuring absolutely no pets. This is the Veterinary Project Podcast, hosted by Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light. Our resident veterinarians have swapped out their stethoscopes in favor of microphones to bring you the Veterinary Project Podcast, a show focused on real conversations, aimed to connect this amazing profession full of remarkable people. Through the sharing of collective stories and wisdom, and connecting over the many unique challenges we face, we invite you to join our community of veterinary professionals leading intentional lives. And now, here are the hosts of the Veterinary Project Podcast, Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light.
Welcome back to the Veterinary Project Podcast. As always, you're joined by Dr. Jonathan Light and Dr. Michael Bug. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, Jonathan.
What happens if we actually ever answered differently, Mike? What do you think would happen?
Probably should, you know, but I guess I am doing fantastic, so I can't lie.
No, and nor should you. And really, on the whole, we are two optimistic guys, so that's what we're doing. And here's where we're starting our podcast today. So yeah. Back to the question, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well. We're prepping. We got Riley's first birthday tomorrow, so we're taking a little bit of time off to spend the morning with her before daycare, so that'll be fun.
That will be a good time, eating some cake.
Oh yeah. Her Rosalie's sister makes just beautiful cakes, and she dropped one off for us.
Fantastic. That'll be on the Instagram posts.
It will be. Yeah. Rosalie will be Instagramming that stuff.
Excellent. Well, we've got a very interesting, innovative, fun discussion today, but before we go into that, what's running through our quick tip? What's happening quick tip wise?
Yeah. So quick tip. I mean, I'm inspired by our conversation as well. I was just so impressed with the scope of thinking and like the lack of limitations. So I would just like to share the quote by Henry Ford. I'm sure everyone has heard it, but whether you think you can or think you can't, you're right. And that was kind of a theme that popped up near the end of this conversation with Jamie. And she talked about the support networks that she had growing up and just the idea that anything is possible being instilled in her at a young age. And it just reminded me of that quote. And I think it's a good reminder for the listeners.
Love it, Mike. We're switching up our quick tip. I think that quote is perfect in so many scenarios and what we're trying to get across here through the Veterinary Project Podcast and the community that we're growing. Thank you for the share. So with that, it's my pleasure to provide the bio for Dr. Jamie Perkins, who joins us this afternoon. She is a 2017 DVM graduate and is currently a tenure track assistant professor of veterinary medicine at the University of Arizona's College of Veterinary Medicine. Prior to joining Arizona, she was an assistant professor within the Lincoln Memorial University College of Veterinary Medicine Center for Innovation in Veterinary Education and Technology. Dr. Perkins has won international awards for development of novel veterinary education tools, including those on Amazon Alexa's platform. Dr. Perkins has authored over 26 ebooks to date and has received over $400,000 in intra and extramural research funding to date. We are really excited to have her with us. And to briefly summarize this episode, we discuss what those innovative projects using Alexa skills through Amazon is to teach veterinary student communication skills in an advanced interactive manner. We talk about her winning the 2018 Hyperdrive contest at the DevLearn conference and how she's turned that into a large USDA grant working on multiple projects at the same time. And lastly, we look at how she leads her team while continuing to gain knowledge from key mentors. So without further ado, please join us for a great conversation with Dr. Jamie Perkins. J, Jamie, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. It is a pleasure to have you on, and we're very grateful for you taking time out of your busy schedule, weekend, everything going on to join Mike and I on the podcast. So thank you very much.
Well, thanks for, you know, for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So I guess a place I thought we could start was for those of our listeners, which is going to be the vast majority, that don't know about this award that you won 2 years ago, 2018, and a little bit more on what that has done to change both your life and your perspectives of you've moved forward now in veterinary medicine. I think that's a great place we could start.
Awesome. I think it's given us a lot of traction, and I think it's given me an opportunity to get it out in some of the, you know, journals, you know, did a couple news interviews and things with that as well, so that we got a little bit of exposure even before some of the project was finished, which was really nice. It gave me, you know, kind of an opportunity somewhere to go back and talk about things that I was capable of doing, like I said, while we had a project that was really in development.
And to be clear here, because in the pre-recording, we talked about who the we behind the scenes is, because as I understand it, you don't have a big coding background. This isn't something that you're very familiar with or grew up with or went to school for, correct?
That is correct. I have a DVM. I do not have a coding background. That was not what I was classically trained in. My father was actually a computer programmer. And so prior to his passing about 2 years ago, I had a lot of help there with him. My dad was extremely passionate about these projects as well and loved just jumping in. So anytime I had an idea, he was off trying to find someone that would help. I've been fortunate even since his passing that I was able to network and communicate with a company. It's actually out of Canada. The company's called Mindflow, and they have kind of a low coding or no coding option in some of their platforms. And then obviously we've, you know, really just kind of gone off the deep end as far as what their tool can do. We're working with them actually on a USDA project that's kind of getting up and running, really cleaning up a lot of that. So a lot of it's just been networking with people who do have the experience in places that I don't. And the rest of it has just been learning kind of as I've gone along with some of those other pieces. And then having the DVM behind me has helped. And a lot of the coding stuff, you know, you can learn online. There's a lot of platforms these days to go and learn those pieces. And really, I think that's what I've done with some of the aspects that I've needed help with.
So where I've got a couple of questions that come up from that answer alone. But before we go there, what was the itis for starting this? What was the itch in going down this path? Like, this is not a normal path for somebody that's only 3 years out of school.
I think like a lot of projects, it was a need-based idea. So I needed something as a student. I needed a training manual of sorts that just didn't exist. And that's where the first projects really started. I built the first one. I called my dad whenever I needed help. For the most part, I just came to him with kind of a finished thing. I started vet school in Australia. And so I was working with the thing that I had built whenever I was over there. And I had classmates that asked where they could, you know, obtain the thing as well. A lot of, I think the assumption was at that time that it was something that was available in the US market. Maybe it just wasn't there or they didn't know where to look, something like that. And it just kind of took off from there. I wound up in front of faculty, in front of deans and other people who just kind of supported the project along the way. And then it just kind of grew into what it is. Because again, as I went through the program and realized there's a need not only in histology, which is where I was starting, but there's a need in anatomy, there's a need in other courses, started building these things and just outlining where kind of those gaps were that I was seeing. And I think that's part of the reason that the project has been as successful so far as it has been, is that it's been a lot of agreement from people. Yes, there is a need. This is a gap that we are filling. This is a place that we can make an improvement.
So a personal use story for your own benefit, people reach out, want to know more about it, and now you have the potential and or it's already in that commercial development phase or pre-phase. You can tell me if I'm wrong. I'm not quite clear on that end.
It just kind of depends which project you're talking about, which ones are done and which ones we're still behind the scenes building and which ones are in research phases with, you know, students.
Let's talk specifically the one with Alexa to start with, because I'm guessing when that was first developed, Alexa was not where she is now in terms of Amazon and the technology.
That is very true. There's been a huge learning, you know, curve on my part, but then a learning curve with people even who've been out utilizing this technology. But there's been just strides every couple of months. It's exponential how much the machine is learning and how much better it gets with recognizing medical terminology, you know, different accents, things like that, that make it more applicable to a wider audience. And so that's been really interesting. But just learning along the way where we can take the technology so that we can put in a pause, for example, because people, when they're naturally speaking, pause, they stop, they think about what they're saying so that the machine doesn't actually time out. Things like making the conversation actually sound like it also has those pauses and going back in that conversational development so that if a student is getting an answer, it sounds more like they're talking to a human than talking to, you know, a voice on a computer. There's a lot of research out there about computer voices compared to human voices. And so I think we've made really great strides as we've refined these Alexa skills to identify some of those areas. And the students have given us great feedback as we've gone along as well. So we've been able to refine those pieces based on the feedback as well.
What does your team look like, Jamie? This is your baby. You've taken it from, you know, it's infancy and help from your dad and help from those around. How have you grown the WeDAO to make it what it is today, and then going forward, what you need it to bring it again into commercial development or any of the such projects that you're working with?
So I consider my team here at UA pretty much everybody here that works at the CVM. I have great support from administration. In fact, I think the way that it's described to me quite frequently is people put a stake in the sandbox and my job is to just play in the sandbox. They've given me the space, the tools, the resources to just build whatever it is that I can build. And I really feel like I've had that support from admin. All of the faculty work with me. There's really not a course that I probably don't jump in or I'm not willing to at any point. So there's great support there. We also obviously have research technicians, anatomy technicians, and people like that that have been fantastic about coming in to relieve me of things like resetting, you know, 3D printers and stuff when we're doing stuff at scale, because I'm working on a lot of those things as well. I obviously collaborate with other universities. My previous boss is a dean at Texas Tech right now, and he probably gets a phone call every other day from me, sometimes about personal stuff and sometimes about work stuff. He is one of the co-PIs on a USDA grant that is here, and that is one of the Alexa projects. So really, just across the industry, I've had great support. And then obviously the people at VoiceFlow, they've been extremely patient with me as we've gone through this process. And as I've learned more of those pieces and as, you know, grants and things came in, I have nothing but good things to say about that company. And they're about to start working with me at an even larger scale. So, you know, they're there. So the team itself that on a day-to-day basis is sitting here doing what I do may be small, but there is so much support in other ways that I definitely consider them all, you know, part of what this team is.
And when you look back at your last 3 years, did you have any inkling or idea you'd be sitting in the chair you're doing right now, you're at right now, and leading the type of team and having the discussions that you thought you'd be having?
No. And I still sometimes don't believe that I'm sitting here in this chair. Occasionally I'll wind up in a faculty meeting or, you know, definitely when I'm in meetings with people who are running large scale companies and meeting executives at Amazon and things like that. And I still sometimes feel like the 12-year-old that mistakenly got to the table, which is nice in some ways, because I think it gives me a great perspective when I do get the opportunity to interact with students, to give them a really real world perspective on that, that even as they get out into practice, you know, if they feel this, that it's going to be completely normal, that it takes a little bit of time to feel like you're in the place that you're supposed to be.
Excellent. Mike, I've asked all the questions so far. Anything from your end before I go forward?
No, I mean, it's amazing. Maybe just for the listeners, we'll maybe clarify a little more around the what, because I know you sent Jonathan and I some of the videos of the programs you're developing. Can you just touch on that for the listeners, like specifically what these training sort of modules and videos do?
Sure. So that first Alexa project, the one that we're talking about with the award, that is something that I've been really passionate about. It's been a great project as we've started. So in vet school, students come in and they practice communication skills training by interacting with the simulated clients in most instances, or with talking to an actual instructor. The issue with that is it's time consuming to set those experiences up. It's cost prohibitive to have as many as I think that, you know, many colleges would like to offer the students. So you question how consistent those experiences are for the students. Somebody may have a simulated client that has a great personality and has a medical background and jumps down one rabbit hole, and then you may have another one that it's like prying teeth to get them to talk. And I think most colleges do better than that, but you know what I mean. It's a wide breadth of experiences for the students. And so what we started with was building out an Alexa skill that when the student logs into the Alexa skill, it reads them like a history that something like a technician would give them as they were standing outside of a room telling them you're about to walk into the room and Mrs. Smith is here for vaccines. And the student would then interact with the Alexa skill like they're talking to that simulated client, asking, why are you here today? Has this animal been eating normally? Normal questions like that, that we're training them to ask and go down those rabbit holes. Now, the answers are consistent because this is a machine now. And there are obviously multiple different rabbit holes the students can go down because some may ask about food, some may ask about, you know, is the animal defecating, whatever it happens to be. But for the most part, we know that they're getting the same experience. And they can take these and they can use these Alexa skills when they're at home. So as you're standing there cooking dinner, if you wanted more practice like this, if you're out walking the dog, whatever it happens to be, which is also nice because you're not going to bring home your instructor or your simulated clients. And, you know, in this new COVID world, that's kind of relative because, yes, they're somewhat on Zoom, but they still have to have, in that scenario, someone live logged in. With the Alexa skill, they don't. They're going through and they're interacting with just that. We built other projects out where they can also go through and just in a hands-free manner have it, you know, recite practice questions. So stuff that they would see on Quizlet. What is this anatomical directional term? Or I'm giving you a definition of an anatomical directional term. What does that happen to be? And so the video that I sent you guys, and you've had the advantage to go through and see, is one of the ebook projects that we have done that was extremely interactive, where the students are clicking around the screen, they can manipulate a skeleton, they can watch videos, they can watch whiteboard videos, and things like that. So imagine what's happening behind the scenes here is my two projects eventually marrying one another, and you're logging in and you're watching those videos and you're doing that stuff on a touch screen, but you also have that voice capability behind it, asking you questions, reinforcing concepts, showing you more whiteboard videos. And again, it's tracking that information as well. So a student who is not mastering their cardiac section, for example, but they've mastered the kidney, is now moving on past the kidney and, you know, going into what it is that they need more reinforcement in. So that's really what's happening with those two kind of projects. There's also a USDA grant, it's a USDA NEFA project. And this one I've been really excited about. And I think this one is where that whole idea of a massive team has come together, because we have state vets and practicing clinicians from across the country, in addition to some of my mentors helping with this one, because I'm not a large animal person. But I've been very passionate about doing the project, because what it is it's a hands-free manner for someone out in practice, potentially doing mobile work, whatever it happens to be, going through and asking, what is a drug dosage for X in the bovine or equine world? Or I have an animal out here and it has vesicles on its nostrils and on its feet, and three or four other things, you know, what are some differentials that I should be looking at because I'm standing in the middle of Tucson, Arizona, and going through and, you know, looking at reportable diseases. And hypothetically, I find a reportable disease. You could then ask the Alexa skill to connect you directly to the state veterinarian and go through that system. So again, just things to help people in practice that right now they may have to stop, Google that on their phone, they may be driving, you know, the time and the safety aspects, some of that we can hopefully alleviate. So that's really what the USDA project is kind of centered around. So again, a hands-free manner with bovine and equine, but that's been a great project to get started. It's given me a lot of connections in the industry. And so far we've gotten a lot of support from people who've been excited about looking at what that looks like done.
Jumping into that grant a little bit, it's not a small amount. Are you able to share what the total is?
It is $236,000 and some change, and I wish I could tell you off the top of my head, but it wound up dividing kind of weird, but it's in that range. It is a substantial grant, and I was very excited that the USDA bestowed that upon our research group to get this project going.
It's a pretty impressive grant. When you know, I chat with colleagues in academia, and you know, they receive a $20,000 grant, $30,000 grant, but then when you said over 200, I went, wow, there has to be something here. And just as you've described it, again, many colleagues out there, Mike, you'd be able to know this better than me. You know, you're driving to a farm call and you've got your book in front of you trying to look at all the different differentials of something, you know, based on a phone call. There's pretty impressive what you're trying to do here.
No, it's been great. We were excited whenever it was awarded. And again, it's one of those moments that I look at and I'm like, did I really get here? Did I, 2 years out of school, have someone award a grant this size to me to do this project? But, you know, it's here.
Were there times, Jamie, when you've doubted yourself?
I definitely think so. I mean, I think on the daily that, you know, normal people have those doubts and have those worries about things. But again, I think that's where having a great support system and a great group around me that I'm working with, you know, and then just seeing how fast it took off. I think if the idea was completely just a wild card to everybody right now, that the awards wouldn't have come in, grant funding and things wouldn't have come in. And I think that's what's been nice about some of the awards and some of the things as I've gone along, is that I have proven the initial concept, proven that I can build the technology, it works, it functions, there's been enough feedback from students that they like utilizing it to test doing what we're doing on such a large scale.
Yeah, fantastic.
And Jamie, with the timelines of everything, did COVID have an impact on this? Like, did COVID speed any of this up, or was it all kind of just following along as per normal, or what happened there?
So I think people would have liked COVID to have sped it up. I think at the end of the day, though, there's only so much that can go out so fast and still maintain quality. And that's a big part of this, is that nobody wants to push out a project that isn't finished. I think what COVID has done, which has been probably nice for me, is that it has proven to many people that the idea of very large scale online education with in-person clinical skills training does in fact work. And so again, I think that a lot of the work that I'm doing behind the scenes is making improvements, cleaning things up, providing that consistency, and a lot of those links that I showed you. So, I mean, you've seen in that video the way that I was interweaving those connections and doing that horizontal and vertical integration of content. And I think there's still room in the industry to do a lot of that and have students go off and watch videos and interact with those pieces and then come in as needed. And I think some people who doubted that system just saw it happen overnight because nobody had a choice with COVID.
That's it. Just pushes that technology and that need so much further forward. Yep.
It does. But I had a ton of requests from people on LinkedIn, you know, email, everything, saying how fast can we get this stuff out here? And it still isn't coming any faster necessarily. There's still a rate limiting step here in terms of anything that has to go through me.
Yep. And there's only so many things you can get done in a day, but amazing having the team behind you. I want to switch course for a second, Jamie, and talk about vet school. You started off in Australia, then moved back into the US. Tell me what your initial thoughts were for when you left vet school about what you would be doing.
Well, it's funny, when I was going to vet school, I was going to be a small animal surgeon, and I was going to do TPLOs and orthopedic surgeries every day. In my, you know, preclinical, right before vet school hours that I was shadowing, there was an orthopedic surgeon that was coming in, and I just thought it sounded like the greatest thing in the history of everness. So I started vet school, and again, I built these first projects in that very first semester, and so it just took me down this different rabbit hole, and then I had so much support that even though I liked doing surgery and I liked doing those pieces, I had everybody even in vet school saying, you know, this is what you're going to do. You're going to wind up in academia. I think they thought, though, that it would be 10 years later than it was, that I was going to go out into clinical practice, have to really prove myself even more. And I think it's part of the reason that as a student, I tried to get so many more things to completion rather than just have, you know, it was enough to get me through it. I looked at it on my iPad. It's fine. I think it was partially that I had a lot of projects there. But yes, I started in Australia. And again, when I, you know, in Australia, probably midway through, said, I'm going to go and I'm going to do marine animals on the side, in addition to this small animal surgery that I was going to do, because I was going to conquer the world that way. And that was kind of my plan. When I transferred, I actually met my PhD advisor. I wound up being a dual degree student and working on a PhD in addition to the DVM at the transfer. And again, just had a lot of support, made a lot of connections there, and really drove home a lot of projects. Still managed to do that marine thing. So one of the things that we built was a CT Atlas of the sea turtle out as an app. And so worked on that. I managed to, again, keep kind of all of the interest going at once. Was doing the programming, was doing the marine stuff, still had the vet thing, you know, behind it. And so it just sort of worked out.
I need to jump in there for a second. There is only 24 hours in a day. There are so many people that would look at what you're doing now and say, that's not possible. And yet you're the example of somebody that is doing it right now. Help us understand that a little bit better. Are you amazing at timekeeping? Do you block out properly? Do you have 5 virtual assistants that we don't know about in the background right now? How are you doing this?
So the exact opposite of that, if you talk to any one of my mentors, one, I don't sleep enough. And I wouldn't advocate for that, but that is part of it, is you sleep less. And two, I've had really good people around me. I think every meeting that I go to, whether it's talking about tenure track or career progression, whatever it happens to be, it is come in with a timeline of what I'm working on, talk about what grants, what papers are going to be behind this, which projects are coming to fruition this year, what's coming next year. And having those people, I think, rein part of it in. If not, I have a tendency to obviously jump down every rabbit hole and start things. I think every time I walk into a toy store or watch a TV show or something like that, I'm like, there's an idea. We could do this because we need this game and we need this. And again, they've given me the technology and the tools here to do it. There's a laser in here. There's CNC machines. There's 3D printers. So as far as whether it's models, whether it's technology, whatever it happens to be, it can come to fruition. But I think part of that is managing it with a team. I would like to say that in a perfect world, I could manage that all by myself. And I think I do an okay job. But I also think that they do a better job of keeping me on track to make sure that stuff gets out quicker, more streamlined. And then after that, it's finding people. So, you know, it's having the mentors that have the people and then having mentors that are in a position to put in support people to help as well. And eventually just sort of comes together.
Excellent.
Part of it's sleep.
two pieces to that. One, what I'm hearing is that you're very strategic because you know yourself and the wormholes that you can go down and rabbit holes and where that could lead you and the good and the bad that comes from that. But secondly, and jumping into the mentorship, you've mentioned that many times on this call already, is the mentors that you have around you. My guess is that you do not have a formal agreement with these mentors, but that it has been born from relationships that you've created from trust with these individuals. How has that come to be? Because you've mentioned this 3 to 5 times already in different areas of this conversation. And yet that seems a key to me to your success.
You are correct in that there's definitely no formal agreement and nobody was really tied to doing this, you know, with me. Obviously, my father was a great mentor as I was growing up, and that just came by luck of the draw to the family that I was born into. But after that, it was again, just meeting people. You know, when I transferred back to the U.S., I met my PhD advisor and we worked very formally in that relationship. And then just, you know, when you're working closely with someone, eventually you learn about their family and things like that. And that, you know, was just kind of born out of that. After that, I think a lot of it is, you know, her also being passionate about educating the next generation of students. And so she stayed with a lot of the projects just out of sheer interest of wanting to see this come to fruition. Yeah, other people that have been mentors along the way, like John Descanio, like I mentioned, that's over at Texas Tech. I mean, he was a boss first, but I was junior faculty and I came with 1.5 million questions over the most basic of things. Can I do this to my office? Can I move this over here? You know, not try not to step on toes with things. And John was just great about answering those things. And so again, it just kind of was born out of that. He also has an interest in educating students and sees the potential with these projects. UA has obviously brought in just a fantastic team of individuals that are really concerned about the next step in veterinary medical education. It's why the college has such a different model. So again, we just brought in this perfect storm of individuals that happen to be also bosses. And so there's just a lot of passion that drives that. But I think for students who are out looking for mentorship, I mean, you find people that obviously, like just mentioned, have similar interest, similar drive. And then other than that, it was just talking to people. I've met some people in my life that don't love me. And I've met others that I just keep going back until they don't tell me no anymore. And that's part of it too, is some of the mentors have just not had an option because I showed up at their door enough times that eventually they said yes.
Love it. Love it. Persistence, ingenuity, lots of patience, and yet willing to go down areas that people, other people haven't. Impressive. Yeah. And that was a big allure to have you onto this podcast as quickly as we have is right from the get-go, from when we were talking, you get that, in that joie de vivre in French, we call it joie de vivre in that wanting to learn more, be part of, and you're fully alive and moving all these different pieces forward. So congratulations to you and your team. I'm really excited. I wish that this was available for our students up in Canada, here and everywhere else. I wanted to ask that question, but you already answered it. We're not quite there yet, but based already on other completed projects, I think we may be seeing this in the near future. I definitely want to be able to share, if you're all right with this, a couple of the videos that you forwarded to us, if that's possible, and a little bit of discussion on the award you won and where this will take things going forward. Pretty impressive.
I think that should be fine. I don't even remember which I've sent you because there's so many demo videos. Let me look at them, but I don't think it'll be an issue at all with sharing that stuff. We're excited to get it in the hands of students. It only does me so much good to sit here and build it and have it just live in my research lab.
That's fantastic. Mike, any other questions before we move to our next piece being the impact round?
I don't know if there's a question in here or not. One thing that's jumping out to me is just the scope and the creativity of your thinking. You don't seem to place limits on yourself. I'm laughing a lot. I remember my first year of vet school, we literally still had an overhead projector, like slap the paper on. And so to think how far advanced this is, and to have you, like back when you were a student, to have this vision and drive it forward is so impressive. So I guess I just want to give you a compliment on like how you don't limit your thinking. It's very impressive.
I definitely grew up with a very supportive father. I was that kid that was told my entire life, you can do anything. And I really think I took that to heart because it was reinforced. Not you can do anything and be a monster, but you can do anything if you want to do it. And I think that's important, and it's helped me drive things forward.
Excellent. Well, with that, we are going to move to our next piece, which is the impact round. And in this round, Jamie, we're going to ask you a number of questions, which you can respond briefly or go into at detail at your will. The first question is, are you a cat or a dog person?
100% a cat person. Just, there's not even a question at all about being a cat person.
So much learning is happening in the Veterinary Project podcast guests, which we are probably now 80% all cat people. True or false?
If I stayed in clinical practice, actually, I potentially would have gone into all feline medicine once I actually got there. That's how much of a cat person, just so you know.
Love it. Love it. True or false? I knew I wanted to be a veterinarian since I was a kid.
Now, you know what's funny is I wasn't that kid that was going to be a veterinarian at 5 years old, actually. I was going to be a lawyer. That was my life plan. I was going to go and I was going to argue with everyone, and I like talking, and I just never stopped talking, and that was what I was going to do. And then when I was in high school, I started shadowing and, you know, kind of fell in love with it. When I got into, you know, later years of high school, people were explaining what the job was, and I, you know, started doing all of the things that you do to get into vet school. I got into vet school and I went, I'm still going to law school, though, just so you know. Every person here hears me all the time. Once this PhD is done, I will work on getting the JD. That is life goal right there, in addition to everything else I'm doing. So I'm not sure where I'm going to fit that, but it's going to happen.
I don't doubt you at all. How would your friends describe what you do for a living?
Nobody knows what I do for a living. I'm sometimes not sure anybody knows what I do for a living because I'm sort of all over the shop with talking about 3D printing one day and then I'm talking about Alexa another, and people are like, do you really even have a job when you go places? So I don't know that anybody could describe what I do. Some people will just say I'm a veterinarian. My family for a little while was describing me that way. And they're like, you're a veterinarian and she treats dogs during the day. And I'm like, it's funny because I never even get to see live animals anymore. But I think that's how they describe it, is either I don't know or she's a veterinarian and just stop.
What is your favorite hobby?
Building Legos. We have more Legos than I care to admit. And they've moved across the country more than once now because of, you know, what I've done with employment and everything. But we build Legos on a grand scale, like compete and build Legos, Lego robotics. I feel like they're coming out of my ear sometimes, but a lot of Lego building.
Very cool. What in the world are you most grateful for?
The opportunities that I have had. I really am. I think that I've been extremely fortunate in my life in all aspects for the most part. And I'm really excited and grateful that it's happened, because I don't think that a lot of people get some of the opportunities that I've had. And I try really hard not to take that for granted.
Love it. So as we come towards the end of our podcast, if people want to get a hold of you, there's a lot to unpack in this episode, Jamie, and there is a lot happening within your projects. What would be the best place if people are interested that they can tune in to see what's happening and or get a hold of you if they have particular questions?
So most people just shoot me an email to my UA email because it's easy to find, you know, easy to track down at the college. I'll answer anything on LinkedIn as well. I use Facebook probably more than anything else. There's still a lot of people that don't like interacting on Facebook, but most people manage to eventually track me down there. But most people will initiate the conversation, I would tell you, by my work email one way or another.
Excellent. Well, as always with our podcasts, first, a big thank you for joining us on a very busy weekend for you and taking time out of your busy schedule to share. And really happy we did this. A lot to be learned, and I'm looking forward, you know, myself personally, to seeing where your projects go and seeing them to completion as you've done with others and getting them out to the masses, because I think the veterinary students here are going to do some amazing things with the technology that you're providing for you and your team. So thank you very much for your time.
No, I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah. And as we come to a close here, the last word goes to you. What message do you want to leave for the veterinary community?
I think I'm going to leave it for the students, because that's, you know, really why I'm here. And I think one of the things that I'd like to leave for the students, whether you're thinking about vet school or whether you're in vet school, is to consider kind of these different career tracks like I've gone down. There's definitely a need for it in this industry. There's obviously a niche spot, or I wouldn't have wound up here so quickly. But consider things like that. Consider the places that you can fit and you can provide your own benefit to this industry by finding yourself there career-wise.
Thank you for listening to the Veterinary Project Podcast. As a recap, on behalf of our hosts, the Veterinary Project Podcast will be releasing new episodes weekly. So be sure to tune in as we bring you more conversations aimed at helping you enjoy a life well lived. If you enjoyed what you heard on the show and you want to stay in the know, please like, love, and or subscribe to the podcast on the listening platform of your choosing, as we're available on all the usual suspects. If you know of others that may benefit from these conversations, we'd love it if you please share the show with them, as this will help us grow our community to reach more and more veterinary professionals. Speaking of which, if you are a veterinary professional and would like to get connected with more like-minded individuals who are joining us on this journey, please send an email to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll invite you to be a part of our private Facebook group. General feedback, requests for information, or perhaps requests to be a guest on the show can also be sent to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com.
Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light, thank you for listening to the show, and we'll catch you again next week for another episode of the Veterinary Project Podcast. Bye for now.